Welcome to the Western Magazine Hour, stories and articles about the American West, produced at the Recording Library of West Texas. Your narrator is Jack.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading some articles from the January 2023 issue of Cowboys and Indians magazine. Meet You There by the Editors. We're celebrating CNI's long legacy as a print publication in 2023, marking the 30th anniversary of the magazine's inception. Our journey and evolution continue, yet they won't keep us from looking back on the highlights and the many unforgettable stories of the last three decades. George Strait's confident smile on this edition's cover says it all. The party's just getting started. While we hope to see you regularly out on the trail and at the newsstand, there's also a place where we can convene as enthusiasts of the Western lifestyle every day. You can get there by laptop or by smartphone and save a little bit on fuel. At CowboysIndians.com, our editors and writers are weighing in with bits of history, fashion, culture, and entertainment to enrich your life and improve your day. A sampling of the recent highlights at CowboysAndIndians.com are, apart from our stunning print guides and destination features, our travel hub offers irreverent fun from around the West, such as the story and contenders behind Alaska's Fat Bear Week, or the delectable and outrageous creations from Texas's storied state fair. Just like the art gallery section in print, our art and culture page collects the inspiring backstories and compelling visuals from the most talented Western and indigenous artists in America. It's also a great spot to stay abreast of the exhibitions you don't want to miss, but can experience vicariously if you can't make it in person. Our home and ranch and real estate tabs show you the latest in interiors and decor styles, and we offer insider tours on the hottest properties in the West, if you're looking to buy now or simply wishing to dream. We're all about recipes under the food and drink tab. Tasting the West's diverse flavors is one way to experience and understand its history. The dishes and cocktails we recommend are meant to be tried at home, but they also shine a light on the hotels, bars, restaurants, and resorts where they originated and the groundbreaking chefs who are creative forces on the culinary scene. You know what sartorial wonders await on CNI's fashion page if you've marveled at the many fashion features we've produced in print over the years. This is the home of Western style online. Click around and you'll meet the makers, influencers, and style setters behind the unforgettable looks. Under entertainment, you'll get daily doses of pop culture, coverage of Westerns, and the latest news about music, movies, and shows in CNI's wheelhouse. Readers of our site were among the first to know about Longmire, Yellowstone, Reservation Dogs, Dark Winds, and Hell on Wheels. Hit the CNI Shop tab to create merch, CNI branded items, specially curated home goods and apparel, and back issues of the magazine. If you love us in print, you'll love us online and on all of our digital platforms like Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest, and our weekly mail newsletter, The Post. Where else are you going to read all about fabulous Western painter Logan Maxwell Hagee and enter for a chance to win a special artist's limited edition of his Pendleton Resting Place blanket? Say her name, Johnny Jankowski. The lone woman in what was then an all-male sport, bull rider Johnny Jankowski held on hard with the fire in her belly and the thought in her head, "Everyone's going to know who the hell I am." By Andrew Jangola. Johnny Jankowski. It's a name every sports fan should know. Yet, when asked today, most would respond, "Who's he?" First, he is a she. Those on the road with Johnny more than 30 years ago, hitting bull-riding jackpots and rodeo invitationals, and anywhere else offering a chance to earn a few bucks hanging on to bucking animals, who don't recognize personal pronouns, will surely attest to that. Johnny Jankowski. The name is bigger than rodeo, or at least it should be. Johnny Jankowski was the first woman to compete against men at the top level in professional bull riding, riding in the Men's Bull Riding World Championship at the Justin World Bull Riding Championships in Scottsdale, Arizona in 1992. She was invited among an international contingent, considering one of the world's top 30 bull riders. Before competing in the world's most dangerous organized sport, Jankowski had been an accomplished track and field athlete. She was born in Fargo, North Dakota in July 1954, so much as she burst into the world, revving to make a mark. Early on, she was an incorrigible tomboy, withering to no challenge. She wanted to be first, the best, the highest, the strongest. The rougher the horseplay, the better. Johnny's mom made her wear jeans because she kept tearing up her dresses. Rambunctious little Johnny didn't stay small. In high school, she shot up 9 inches to a lanky 5'8" and began winning track and field events. With the Olympics on my brain, she was second in the country running for Flathead Valley Community College, a small school in Kalispell, Montana, and was headed for the 1976 Summer Games in Montreal. In the final qualifying event for the pentathlon, however, she clipped a hurdle and went sprawling. A severe back injury crushed her dream. She left college. For 2 years, she could barely walk. She was lost and despondent. One afternoon at a restaurant outside Billings, she saw a sign advertising an all-girls rodeo. No longer able to run like the wind, she figured she could sit on an animal doing the work. In 10 years, at 32, Johnny Jankowski would be a world champion bull rider. She won her first world championship in the now-defunct PWRA by taking her last ride with a crushed leg after being stepped on in the final round leading into the championship. Her damaged leg had blown up like Popeye's arm. Doctors warned that a blood clot from the injury could kill her. She didn't need a high score, just one successful ride to win the championship. Johnny made it to the bucking chutes on crutches and had to be hoisted onto the final bull. She rode him. She had her gold medal. Jankowski would fly to New York to sit with David Letterman, who commented, "You thought track was too dangerous, so you tried something safer, like bull riding." Earning that buckle the hard way, fair and square, allowed for such good-natured joking. She didn't want to be a martyr or recklessly stupid, just recognized as the world's best. Johnny wore the buckle upside down so she could look down and see world champion. Before then, though, those believing they were protecting a misguided girl way out of her lane had come swooping in without the cheeky humor of Letterman. Everyone seemed to have a righteous opinion, self-assuredly opposed to a naive girl exhibiting her free will while planning her own funeral. Others got a charge from helping the curly-haired young lady with the big smile, easy laugh, and outlandish plans. After seeing that rodeo poster, Johnny went to a local bar and found an experienced cowboy to teach her riding basics. "I was so naive, I didn't even know to be afraid," she said. "If others could do it and survive, how bad could it be?" She started getting on bulls, one with only one hand in the bull rope, not the two hands other women were told to use. She lost count of the time she heard that girls shouldn't be riding bulls because strong, able men had been killed doing so. The loudest voice, the one that rang through her head the most, came from her own father. My journey as a bull rider was so painful, physically and mentally, especially in a family who didn't understand it at all, she remembered 4 decades later. The Jonkowski family lived in Montana, but Johnny, who had 2 older brothers, was more of a city girl. Billings may not have been New York or Chicago, with rows of office towers scraping the sky, but Johnny wasn't on a farm getting on sheep or going to rodeos like other kids who'd go on to ride bulls. Her dad, who managed a local Toyota dealership, kept repeating his version of reality. It's just a phase, a stupid, reckless one. She'll grow out of it, something more ladylike to do. Something safe and proper and sane. It's only a matter of time. In time, she'll get this out of her system. Only Johnny didn't. The more she tasted the rush of the rides, the hotter the fire burned. You don't do it to get hurt, she said. You do it because it feels great when it goes right. Her dad would never understand her unquenchable drive or the absolute elation of doing something deemed off-limits for half the people walking planet Earth by virtue of rigid expectations attached to birth chromosomes they didn't choose. He certainly couldn't fathom toying with the lopsided risk-reward ratio of a sport like bull riding. Johnny's mom became her quiet supporter, finding marital middle ground to navigate her husband's immovable displeasure by quietly acknowledging and encouraging her daughter's beautifully fierce fighting spirit, even when a show of support went against every protective bone in her body. Mom was always there when I flew out for a rodeo, but never when I came back. She always thought that when I left, it would be the last time she'd see me alive. When she started, Jonkowski had heard bull riding was dangerous, but knew little else about the sport. At first, I had no equipment and had to borrow a rope and spurs. I didn't know I had to say go and nod my head to get out of the chutes. I'm in there on my bull, and the gate guys were all looking around asking, "Is she ready? Is the bull ready?" Once Johnny understood the go decision was up to the rider, her first out lasted a respectable 4 seconds. "That really turned my crank," she said. "I'd gotten on Bronx and rode bareback. This was a whole different thing. Yeah, it was a case of hooked line and sinker." In practical terms, a mother's fear and a father's recalcitrance were justified. In Johnny Jonkowski's ongoing project, cooking up a mean dish of crow to jam into the gaping mouths of each and every singer in the choir of negativity, she would nearly lose her life on more than one occasion. The injuries came quickly. When she first began, she just about lost her nose. Johnny wouldn't have been in the position of facial disfigurement if it weren't for her plucky stubbornness. She had been rejected for admission to dozens of bull riding schools and camps. None would take a girl. Finally, she called one to interrogate Johnny. They had no idea Johnny was not a boy. She showed up in Fountain, Colorado, and would train in a school run by Chris Ledoux, a stunning multi-hyphenate talent who won a bareback world championship and sold more than 6 million records singing country music. Former Saddle Bronc world champion Bobby Berger, and rodeo world champion Bruce Ford. The quality of the school's motley assortment of bulls was all over the map. There were some jumpers and a few tough spinners. There were bulls who lunged wildly without rhyme or reason, and so the student body was dwindling. Guys were dropping out by the day, some out of quaking fear and being fated to an unpredictable bull. Others frustrated when quickly eating dirt every time out. The one girl standing tall was a strong-minded athlete with something to prove. But girl, boy, it didn't matter. Nobody was going to outmuscle these bulls. The game was one of anticipation, balance, and finesse. Staying on actually came pretty easy to Johnny, even as attendance at the school, which began with more than 100 would-be rodeo stars was shrinking fast. On the final day, down to 10 riders, a school champion would be determined. She drew a bull named Spotted Dog. Johnny made the ride, and when she pulled the tail of her rope to dismount, the bull tripped. She was ready to throw a leg over him, but Spotted Dog hooked a horn and flipped. She was half sitting on the ground and saw a hoof coming at her. I thought, oh God, he's going to kick me in the face. My head snapped back. I didn't feel a thing. I thought he missed me. I jumped to the side but couldn't see well. Bobby Berger and Bruce Ford ran out and said, geez, your nose is torn off. Then Ledoux ran out and said, that you did, but you stayed on. You won. Her face looked like it had come out of a blender. Medics applied compresses and loaded her into the ambulance. The motor turned and turned, producing a depressing sound of scraping metal, a dead battery. They climbed into the second ambulance, sinking to one side, flat tire. Jody was rushed to the nearest hospital, 40 minutes away. Her rotten luck, since being matched with Spotted Dog, took a humongous, beautiful, life-altering, face-saving turn. A national plastic surgeons convention was in town. The out-of-town specialists who were summoned were excited to see her, she remembers. A bull had exploded my face apart. I was ripped from my hairline down through my eyebrows, across the bridge of my nose. I was a pretty good project for them, like a Humpty Dumpty test dummy. Johnny's rearranged face was fixed by the very best in the business, at no charge. Because she stayed on Spotted Dog, until the whistle and got a good score, she was school champion, even though nobody would officially admit it. She had nearly lost her face, but they couldn't lose face by giving the buckle to a girl. The injury was actually freeing. She'd get back to riding bulls as soon as she could. My rationalization was, I'm too ugly to do anything else. I gotta go back. Besides, God wouldn't have healed me up so fast if he didn't want me to go out and do it again. She knew she couldn't control a one-ton animal, but she could build her gangly body to increase the odds for being in a better position next time. She would virtually live in a gym and get ripped, soon boasting 7% body fat. You got to be strong through the middle to ride bulls, and my abs were ridiculous. I was a tough son of a gun. A big part of bull riding is reflexes to counteract the bull. As an athlete, I knew that reflex doesn't go through fat well. Other girls riding were flapping all over the place. I was in control, so I'd get the points. Jankowski also knew when and how to play off being a woman. She'd show up at the Cowboys' locker room, and there was only one, in a dress and heels wearing red nail polish. I didn't want them to think I was macho. I was all woman and didn't want any mistakes to be made by anyone. No errors were made. As the other riders were getting ready, Johnny would morph into stunning siren to cowboy athlete and stud mode, unlike anything they'd seen. The other guys were stripping down to the buff, so I'd strip down to my panties and sports bra to scare the shit out of them. And then I'd put on my riding gear. The transformation jacked her confidence and brought results in a sport said to be at least 90% mental. One bull, Mr. T, had not been ridden in 42 outs by the best riders in the world. Johnny rode Mr. T in South Dakota, helping win more respect for riders seeing her, earning her stripes, sometimes literally, like breaking 12 bones in her arm or getting hit so hard in the back of her head it broke bones in her face, giving her kaleidoscopic vision for months. At first it was like a high school dance. I was on one side of the arena and they were on the other. They wouldn't touch me with a stick, but that changed fast. I'd been up and down the road living in a pickup, sleeping in a room with 20 other people. The guys knew I'd paid my dues and earned my stripes. Jankowski, a two-time world champion and 1991 inductee into the Cowgirl Museum and Hall of Fame, retired from riding in 2000 at 46 years old. My body couldn't take it, or I'd still be out there. At 67, she has a slightly crooked smile and a scar running down her forehead that would have been a lot worse if not for that plastic surgeon confab on exactly the right day. On a long time after hanging up her rope, she wondered, what was I thinking? I'd look in the mirror and say to myself, what have you done? What she did was inspire everyone with a dream in any area of life while blazing a trail for every young female rider today who is trying to make it to the top in the new modern era of bull riding. I didn't plan on being different, Jonkowski said. All I knew my whole life is to be all out. It takes guts to go out there to do what your heart tells you to do at full bore. I was a bull rider, and if you're not all or nothing, you probably won't be a very good one. She was a very good one. Johnny Jonkowski. Say her name. Art of the Cowgirl. Horsewoman Tammy Pate's nonprofit passes cowgirl skills along to a new generation by connecting the aspiring with the inspiring. By Lindsay Welchel. Imagine someone offers you a chance to spend a week with one of your heroes who's famous for excelling at the thing you're most passionate about. You get to visit their home, see them work, ask them questions, and learn from them one-on-one. That opportunity of a lifetime is exactly what happens when the nonprofit organization Art of the Cowgirl connects aspiring women in the cowgirl arts, fine arts, silversmithing, braiding, saddle making, equestrian sports, and many other Western trades with masters of their respective crafts. The doors that open and the friendships that are made keep many a cowgirl's dreams alive and well on their way to coming true. It's all a dream come true for Art of the Cowgirl founder Tammy Pate, a cowgirl herself who knows a thing or two about the beauty of the Western lifestyle. She grew up in Montana, spending summers on her grandparents' ranch, exploring the world from the back of her trusted horse. Pate never strayed from the cowgirl lifestyle as she became a wife to her high school sweetheart, and they raised two now-grown children around cattle, ranching, rodeo, and horsemanship. One of the reasons I think it's so important for people to be exposed to this lifestyle is it builds confidence, Pate says. When my dad and mom and grandparents were raising us, we didn't ever think there was anything we couldn't do. They gave us a horse and told us to go move cows, and we figured it out. We got in a pickup, and I had to back a horse trailer up. I don't even ever remember thinking I can't do something. It's that kind of confidence born of learned skills that Pate fosters through Art of the Cowgirl mentoring fellowships. Pate has always had an artistic and entrepreneurial side. Years ago, as a young mother, she would make and sell appliqued jean jackets at the National Finals Rodeo. When she decided to take up bootmaking under the guidance of a successful local bootmaker, she discovered the power of mentorship. She quickly learned the craft and spent several successful years making and selling her boots in business with her mentor. Being able to continue this time-honored trade was powerful to Pate. Eventually, she also joined her husband in a career as a horsemanship clinician. Seeing the parallels between yoga and horsemanship skills, Pate started leading combination yoga horsemanship retreats 15 years ago. Making connections with horsewomen at the retreats planted the seeds of a dream to empower women to follow their own dreams and hone their skills in a variety of Western arts and disciplines. The thought came years ago, and it took me a while to get the confidence to just go for it. When I turned 50, I told my husband, I'm just going to do it. If I don't do it, I'm going to regret it. And 4 years later, it is absolutely amazing. It has grown beyond anything I could have imagined, and I'm so proud. We have funded 27 fellowships to date. celebrating cowgirl grit and spirit, is integral to the organization's mission, and Pate is not in short supply of that grit herself. Shortly after the inaugural Art of a Cowgirl event in 2019, Pate was diagnosed with late-stage cancer. She relied on her determination, as well as a lot of research into unconventional treatments, to battle the disease and emerge cancer-free in just 6 months. "I believe it's the Western spirit," Pate says. "It's no different than ranchers who go through blizzards and lose everything. They don't give up. If what they're doing isn't working, they just rebuild and try something different. You don't give up, and that's the way I try to live my life." The tenacity of Pate's has propelled the Art of the Cowgirl organization forward as well. It now solicits applications from cowgirls across the country through social media and word of mouth. The organization painstakingly reviews the applications to select fellows they compare with masters, both women and men who are experts in their fields, to foster learning, community, and support among the female recipients. "We give the fellowships to people who want to make it a business and those who want to give back. Those are two main things we look at even more than skill, because the skill can be taught. We just want someone who's passionate about preserving our Western traits." That's the case for fellowship recipient Andre Etsiti, who has goals for making her mark as a breakaway roper, horse trainer, and instructor for other cowgirls on the Navajo reservation where she lives. Etsiti grew up with horses. Her love of the animal is embedded in her Native American culture, as it is tied to her childhood memories in youth rodeo and her education studying equine science. Nowadays, Etsiti shares horsemanship techniques and agricultural information through her work in educational programming for the Diné College Land Grant Office. And though she felt comfortable in the sport of barrel racing, Etsiti was looking to step up her game when it came to teaching breakaway roping, so she could encourage the young women of her community to embrace the fast-growing sport. "Coming from the reservation, I think there's a lot of potential for our Native American horsewomen, and if I could help be a catalyst for that, I would feel very good." That vision is what drew her to applying for a fellowship opportunity with Art of the Cowgirl. She didn't think she'd be chosen, but she liked the organization's focus on paying it forward in the industry. "I wanted to be that teacher for the kids who are starting out, as well as for the moms that put their rodeo career on the back burner for their kids or their career, because I was also that girl," she says. "I was the girl who was starting out, and I'm the mom, too, because I put my rodeo career aside for an education career and motherhood." It was on a particularly hard day at her 9-to-5 job that Etsiti got a phone call from Jamie Stiltzfus, fellowship and sponsorship director for Art of the Cowgirl. It was the boost Etsiti desperately needed. Stiltzfus was calling to let her know she'd been selected to receive an all-expenses-paid chance to learn from one of the breakaway roping's most accomplished cowgirls, Larry D. Guy, a Women's Professional Rodeo Association world champion of the sport. Etsiti wouldn't be the only call Stiltzfus would be making. The Art of the Cowgirl organization awarded 6 additional opportunities like Etsiti's for the 2022 award year. They've awarded a similar number of fellowships each of their previous 3 years in operation, adding up to a sizable impact on fostering emerging talent in the Western industry. Candidates aren't in short supply. Every year, the organization averages about 30 applicants for each fellowship, but has received upwards of 100 before for a single fellowship, according to Stiltzfus, who got the call at Etsiti with the good news she'd been selected. The Art of the Cowgirl team and many of the masters themselves spend about 4 to 6 weeks going through applications in early spring with the difficult task of picking the winners. The responsibility of offering someone this sort of opportunity isn't taken lightly. It's so impactful. It truly is life-changing for so many women. It has really changed the trajectory of what they're doing with their time. The feedback we get is that this has been so empowering, the confidence gained from being chosen and being poured into. Sometimes that's all that's taking for these girls to reach their next level. Someone giving them confidence and them believing in themselves. And they're off and running. It is so rewarding. It's not just the recipients who benefit from this opportunity. Nancy Martini is a master saddle maker who has been crafting beautiful and functional saddles since the 1980s after she was fortunate enough to be mentored by Dale Harwood, a legend in the saddle making industry. When Martini became a mentor herself for the Art of the Cowgirl's first 3 years in operation, she knew firsthand the importance of proper guidance, but had a little idea of the positive impact the role would have on her own life. It got me out of the house, out of the shop. I spend a lot of time here by myself, Martini says. For a lot of years, I hadn't been going to any shows or really mingling with people in the industry. Nobody knew what we were getting into in the nonprofit's first year, but it turned into such a good deal from the start. People were real supportive, and it stayed that way. The recipients are all at different levels, but they always learn a lot, and I learn a lot from them. Martini is just one example of Pate's ability to connect with people. She's been able to involve many professionals she knows in the industry, from her and her husband Kurt's years giving horsemanship clinics. Now that the organization has gotten more established, even people she doesn't know want to participate. The National Cowgirl Museum and Hall of Fame has become a strong supporter and bountiful source of Masters of Cowgirl Crafts. In fact, at City's mentor, Larry D. Guy, is a 2021 honoree in the Hall of Fame. Guy has won multiple world championships, and she credits her family for giving her a solid foundation in the sport of rodeo. Now it's important that she help others in her role as a teacher. Be able to give back is why I do what I do. I was very fortunate to have support in my rodeo career, and not everyone does. That's why I took on the job that I took on, and that was teaching women to rope. I wanted women in roping to grow. There are so many girls out there that rope so good, and to me, I felt like roping is a handed art, and I wanted to hand it down to the next generation to come. At its city's mentor, Guy focused on handing down her knowledge, as well as sharing with its city her career in rodeo and her life on a cow-calf ranch in Abilene. Like each pairing of master and fellow, the fruits of Guy's and its city's work together will be on display at Art of the Cowgirls marquee event January 18 to 22 in Queen Creek, Arizona. Beyond raising funds and awareness, the culmination of the fellowships in this main event is at the heart of the nonprofit's plan. I've always felt it was really important to have the event to showcase these fellowships publicly and to create a place where people come together to meet other people. It's the idea of connection that was one of the driving goals of creating the event. Kurt and I have been so blessed with all of our traveling our whole life. We've met all of these amazing people and had all these great opportunities. But if you're a ranch wife in small town Wyoming, for example, how are you going to meet those people? The event is a place where all these high-powered people come. All of our sponsors come. We have round tables where we put people together. It's a place to network. Making those connections is an opportunity for its city to continue her mission of bettering her community. I think for being me, being a Native American and a millennial, I struggle between finding balance. I have to work this 9-to-5 job, which doesn't give me enough time to stay home and learn all the songs, the prayers, the medicines. So there's a fine line we have to walk. I feel like this opportunity will help me pick up a piece of that puzzle and put it where it needs to be so I can learn more and I can bring those teachings back.
Hello, this is Michael, and I'm reading articles from True West Magazine, published January 2023. Best of the West 2023, Western Books, by Stuart Rosebrook. The Hero's Journey, the heroic efforts of the men and women who write and publish about the West, must be celebrated. This year will mark the 10th year I have been reporting on Western writing and publishing for True West. The Western nonfiction and fiction genres, including biography, have endured a lot of challenges from the marketplace, demographics, and publishers. In the past decade, readership of Westerns has declined. Publishers have redirected or shuttered their Western divisions, and bookstores have diminished their Old West history and fiction sections. Yet across the country and the world, 20 and 21st century Western regional mysteries and crime fiction continue to grow and thrive, as does the ebook marketplace for traditional Western fiction. We have seen a major shift in the publishing industry generationally, and fewer readers are in the pool for the Western history and fiction marketplace. So what is the solution, and what does the future hold? First, the heroic efforts of the men and women who get up every day and ply their craft, researching, writing, and rewriting their Western novels and nonfiction, must be honored and commended. Writing side by side with the authors are the Western publishers, who still believe in the genre and are greenlighting new volumes of history, biography, and fiction. And when handing out laurels, we cannot forget the readers, the ultimate bellwether of the genre, who steadfastly stand by and support the Western, the most original of American publishing genres. I am an optimist, but we must face the realities of the publishing industry. With New York and university houses limiting their acquisition of 19th century Western genre manuscripts, let alone the closing of major publishers of Old West frontier fiction, including Five Star, the Old West publishing industry is facing its greatest challenges since its international rise in popularity a century ago. Where do we go from here? Writers and publishers who believe in Western fiction and history must remain both competitive and cooperative. Additionally, our community must ask the question, when does the Old West begin and end? Maybe it is time to push the timeline forward to 1950, a distinct beginning of a new decade of post-World War II growth across the American West. For many of us, that is the decade the New West began, and the modern West of the last seven decades is the one we are all living in today. The West we know is the West of Taylor Sheridan, Craig Johnson, C.J. Box, and Tony Hillerman. It is also why their West is the most popular with their respective audiences. As I emphasized in my recent keynote speech to the Will Rogers Medallion Award nominees and their families in Fort Worth, writing is rewriting. And it is time we rewrite and take ownership of our genre's boundaries to ensure its future. As the great Will Rogers said, if you wait until you are ready, you will wait forever. Stuart Rosebrook. Rough drafts. Never kick a cow chip on a hot day. Will Rogers. I had the honor of being the keynote speaker for the Will Rogers Medallion Award opening night in Fort Worth, Texas, on October 28, 2022. The title of my address was based on my father Jeb Rosebrook's motto, writing is rewriting. I was glad to know my remarks resonated with the group of writers and their families who had gathered to celebrate the craft of writing and the well-deserved accolades of their hard work. I loved the opportunity to speak to such a lauded audience about writing and was very impressed with the body of work of the 2022 Will Rogers Medallion Award nominees. A highlight of the weekend was being present at the Saturday night banquet and award ceremony when Robert Vaughn received the Will Rogers Medallion Lifetime Achievement Award. Vaughn is still actively publishing with Wolfpack and is True West's Best Western Fiction Author of the Year. Congratulations to the following gold medal winners in Western history and fiction. Western biographies and memoirs. The Lady and the Mountain Man by Chris Innes. Published by Two Dot. Western nonfiction, Confederates and Comancheros, Skullduggery and Double Dealing in the Texas-New Mexico Borderlands by James Bailey Blackshear and Glenn Sample Ely, published by University of Oklahoma Press. Western fiction, Traditional, Never Let Go, Survival of the Lake Shtek Women by Pamela Nowak, published by Five Star. Western short stories, The Book Mama, by Charlotte Hinger from Librarians of the West, a quartet, published by Five Star. Western Maverick, Lakota Cowboy, by John Hafner, published by Speaking Volumes. And Western Cookbook, Keep 'em Full and Keep 'em Rollin', the All-American Chuck Wagon Cookbook by Natalie Bright, published by Two Dot. For more information on the Will Rogers Medallion Award Organization and complete list of 2022 nominees and winners, and how to nominate a book for the 2023 awards, visit the nonprofit's website at willrogersmedallionaward.net. Beginning of True West's list of Best of the West 2023 Western books. Western History. Best Author and Historical Nonfiction Book of the Year. The Earth is All That Lasts, Crazy Horse, Sitting Bull, and The Last Stand of the Great Sioux Nation by Mark Lee Gardner, published by Mariner Books. In a year crowded with excellent Western history and biography, Mark Lee Gardner's The Earth is All That Lasts, Crazy Horse, Sitting Bull, and The Last Stand of the Great Sioux Nation stands above the rest as the most ambitious history biography in both the Western genre and general American biography. His use of primary resources, especially those of Native peoples, is exemplary. I believe it is the finest dual biography of Crazy Horse and Sitting Bull ever written. What is next for Gardner? I am certain, as I wrote in my July-August 2022 review of The Earth is All That Lasts, that the intrepid historian's next volume will provide a new perspective and fresh conclusions gleaned from primary sources previously untapped. I, for one, will be at the front of the line waiting for it, whether it will be a presidential biography, a law and order opus, or another dual biography. Whatever it is, I will be eager to be enlightened and entertained. Online, HarperCollins.com. Reader's Choice, Tie, The Widowed Ones, Beyond the Battle of the Little Bighorn by Chris Innes and Howard Kazanjian with Chris Courtlander, published by Two Dot, and From Sand Creek to Summit Springs, Colorado's Indian Wars by Linda Womack, published by Caxton Press. First-time author. Best first-time author, Billy the Kid, El Bandito Simpatico by James B. Mills, University of North Texas Press. Few authors of the Old West genre have attempted to enter the marketplace so ambitiously as Australian writer James B. Mills did with his first book, Billy the Kid, El Bandito Simpatico. Mills's research is outstanding, and his conclusions on the importance of the Hispano community to Billy set a new standard for William Bonney scholarship. As I wrote in my October 22nd review of Billy the Kid, I am eager to read Mills's next work, In the Days of Billy the Kid, The Frontier Lives of Jose Chavez y Chavez, Juan Patron, Martin Chavez, and Eugenio Salazar, which I'm sure will be written with the same vigor and style as El Bandito Simpatico. If you don't already own it, there is a new kid on the block. Online, untpress.unt.edu. Self-published. Chasing Billy the Kid, Frank Stewart and the Untold Story of the Manhunt for Billy the Kid by Roy B. Young and Kurt House, Three Rivers Publishing. And Texas Gold Rushes, 450 Years of Prospecting and Mining for Gold and Silver in the Texas Hill Country by Raymond V. Carter, self-published. In today's Western publishing climate, historians across the country are more and more turning to self-publishing to see their life's work and passion in print. Three historians who chose this route last year are Raymond V. Carter and the writing and publishing partnership of Roy B. Young and Kurt House. Carter, a well-known Texas Hill Country historian and public speaker on Texas history, has been working for many years on his coffee table size, highly illustrated Texas Gold Rush history. For collectors of Texas history, Carter's masterwork, Texas Gold Rushes, is a must for any collection. Young and House, veteran authors and award-winning members of the Wild West History Association, teamed up to produce one of the strongest entries of scholarship on the Lincoln County Cattle War and the Manhunt for Billy the Kid. If you are a devoted scholar of the Kid and his violent life in the New Mexico Territory, then Chasing Billy the Kid must be part of your library. The duo's book is also a coffee table size book with hundreds of illustrations. Without the dedication and grassroots historians such as Carter, Young, and House, Western history would have long become a genre of the few rather than a genre for the masses. Thanks to those men for digging deep in the archives in pursuit of their scholarship, no matter the odds, and personal investment. We are all beneficiaries of their timeless work. Western History Publishing. Publishers are currently resetting the genres of Western history and biography, and Western authors must adjust, or the two fields will continue to wane in volumes and sales. I have been and always will be an advocate for Old West history, and I don't want to see it diminish any further in the marketplace. But it is an uphill battle, and we at True West, like every other publishing staff, must be cognizant of the changes. Now more than ever, our readers must support the industry of Old West history publishing, but the genre must adapt or fade even further. Look no further than your most recent university book catalogs to notice a greater emphasis on the 20th century versus the 19th century. Best Western History Book Publisher, University of North Texas Press, Denton, Texas. For the past decade, the University of North Texas Press has been a bright and shining star in 19th century Western history publishing. Small compared to its neighboring competitors at the universities of Texas, Oklahoma, and Nebraska, UNT Press has for many years demonstrated for the determination to be an important publishing house of Western history. In 2022, their number one book was James B. Mills's Billy the Kid, El Bandito Simpatico. Mills, an Australian writer, has established himself as one of the top up-and-coming Western authors, and we will all benefit from UNT Press having taken the chance on an author who lives 8,300 miles away, but whose passion is centered in the Old West. untpress.unt.edu. Reader's Choice, TIE, Two Dot Publishing, Lanham, Maryland, and University of New Mexico Press. Best University Press, University of Nebraska Press, Lincoln, Nebraska. The University of Nebraska Press and its imprint, Bison Books, have been leaders in 19th century Western history for over eight decades. Like its peers, Nebraska has major divisions outside of the Old West and is respected across the board for 20th and 21st century Western history, including one of the best scholarly catalogs on baseball. Bison Books, launched two decades after the press was founded in 1941, is the gold standard for Western history imprints and is why True West's editors depend on Bison to be a cornerstone of Western history scholarship. Nebraska has strong competition from the University of Oklahoma, University of North Texas, Texas A&M Press, New Mexico, California, and Nevada. But currently, they are the standard bearer for the genre. We look forward to many more years of Bison and the University of Nebraska's 19th century Western scholarship. Reader's Choice, Tie, the University of Oklahoma Press and the University of California Press. Western Fiction. This past year has been tumultuous for Western fiction. Fortunately for readers, Wolfpack Publishing is setting records in sales, and Kensington's Pinnacle Westerns has a strong string of veteran Western writers. The entire industry mourns the loss of Five Star's Western and Frontier Book Division. We will watch closely to see where the Five Star writers land and are hopeful they all will secure new contracts to continue their work. Fans of Western fiction should keep a close eye on Old West fiction offerings from university and regional publishers. But the reality is that 20th and 21st century Western mysteries rule the marketplace. Best Historical Western Novelist and Novel. Robert Vaughn and the Tenderfoot, Wolfpack Publishing. Author Robert Vaughn began building a fan base nearly 60 years ago when he published his first novel while on active duty in the U.S. Army in South Vietnam in 1967. Nearly 500 books later, Vaughn is still entertaining his fans with his highly readable prose and great storytelling. On October 29, 2022, the Will Rogers Medallion Award Organization honored the New York Times best-selling author for his dedication to his craft with the Lifetime Achievement Award. In the tradition of the works of Zane Grey, Max Brand, and Louis L'Amour, Vaughn's The Tenderfoot is an instant Western classic, and I know readers will be eager to read more volumes in his new series. Online, wolfpackpublishing.com. Reader's Choice, Lee Martin, Pearl Heart and the Violent Men, Vaca Mountain Press. Best Western Fiction Press, Wolfpack Publishing, Las Vegas, Nevada. Wolfpack is one of the greatest success stories in Western fiction publishing in the last 30 years. Owner and director Mike Bray has taken a small startup fueled by the concept of delivering classic Westerns to eager readers while paying writers a generous royalty. With a great understanding of the analytics of selling books on Amazon, Bray's Wolfpack is the strongest Western ebook publishing house in 2023. Online, wolfpackpublishing.com. Reader's Choice, Tie. Pinnacle Books, New York, New York, and Five Star Books, Watertown, Maine. Book selling. Everyone who loves Western books and travels the West knows that a region's heartbeat is in the bookstores of the small towns. True West's editors have always been great supporters of independent booksellers of new and used books. We applaud the work the owners and their staffs do every day to provide the most essential services for local customers and writers. Remember, support your local bookstores and authors, and when on vacation, make sure to seek out the local bookstore and thank them for their service to their community. Best Western History Bookstore, Collected Works, Santa Fe, New Mexico. A favorite of True West's editors for over four decades, Collected Works Bookstores in Santa Fe, New Mexico, has been the place to find the best Western titles in fiction and nonfiction. Under the ownership of Dorothy Massey, Collected Works has thrived and is the city's oldest independent bookstore, a favorite of the internationally acclaimed literary and arts community. Stop in and browse, ask the friendly staff for advice on current books and authors, and relax with a gourmet coffee or tea in the in-store cafe. Iconic Coffee Roasters. Online, collectedworksbookstore.com. Reader's Choice, Tie. Cactus Bookstore, San Angelo, Texas, and Hooked on Books, Colorado Springs, Colorado. True West, January 2023 edition. Best of the West 2023, Western Wear, by True West Editors. Cowboy Up, from Austin, Texas to Sydney, Australia, cowboy hats and boots are all the rage. For over 150 years, the American cowboy hat and Western boot have been icons of the West. Currently, there is a resurgence in the popularity of hats, boots, and Western wear worldwide. Why is Western wear gear so popular? Between social media, pop culture, professional rodeo, country music, and down-and-out practicality, plus Taylor Sheridan's blockbuster series Yellowstone and 1881, fans can't get enough Western wear, and we'll tip our hat to that. Here are True West's top boot, hat, and clothing makers for 2023. Best Western Bootmaker, Tecovas, Austin, Texas. For the second year in a row, True West recognizes Tecovas' handcrafted men's and women's boots as the best in the West. Paul Hedrick founded the innovative Western brand in 2015 in Austin, Texas. The company makes all its boots by hand in its Leon, Guanajuato, Mexico factory and ships them to customers worldwide, in addition to 9 Texas stores. Tecovas also operates retail shops, boots, clothing, and accessories in 11 states across the West and Southeast. Online, tecovas.com. Reader's Choice, Tony Lama Boots, Justin Brands, Fort Worth, Texas. Best Western Hat Maker, Stetson Hat Co., Garland, Texas. For the second year in a row, Hat Co., the parent company of Stetson, is True West's best Western hat maker. Stetson, the most storied cowboy hat company in the world, is also the international distributor of Resistall, Charlie One Horse, Wrangler, and Dobbs hats to fine retail establishments worldwide. Online, hat-co.com. Reader's Choice, Ty, Knudsen Hat Company, Golden Gate Western Wear, Richmond, California, and Catalina Hatters, Bryan, Texas. Best Western Clothing Maker, Recollections, Hawks, Mississippi. A perennial favorite of True West, Recollections is a clothing company specializing in Victorian, Edwardian, Civil War, Pioneer, and Old West frontier lines. Recollections also has a wide variety of styles from the Revolutionary War, Georgian, and Regency eras, the Roaring Twenties, and 1950s. The unique purveyor of historic costumes also has period costumes from movies and television productions, and a full selection of hats and other accessories to help customers complete their historic fashion goals. Online, recollections.biz. Reader's Choice, Miller International, Cinch and Miller Ranch Brands, Denver, Colorado. Best Period Western Clothing Maker, Michael J. Julie Designs, Bellevue, Colorado. As editors and readers' favorite at True West for many years, Michael J. Julie Designs has been creating leather goods for customers worldwide for 4 decades. Julie specializes in making buffalo coats, deer skin, buckskin dresses, and rawhide coats, many of which have appeared in film and television. Online, Michael J. Julie, G-U-L-I, Designs.com. Reader's Choice, Scully Wamaker, Oxnard, California.
Thank you for joining us for the Western Magazine Hour. Stories and articles about the American West. Your narrator has been Jack. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.